What have you seen that has made a patient lobby or patient advocacy group successful?
Well, it takes a lot of legwork and a lot of energy. A lot of groups are interested in publicizing their particular disease, so there's a lot of competition out there. What successful groups have done is what I would call a grassroots sort of campaign. So they try to get as many people interested in the issue as possible. A lot of the people have either had the disease or know someone who's had the disease, and they start doing a lot of different activities. One is publicity. So they try to get on TV shows and radio shows. They do lobbying. So they go to their local legislatures and try to get attention paid by legislators and funding for the disease. They go to local public health officials and say, this is a disease that's been overlooked or neglected, and you need to focus your energies not only in other diseases, but this one as well. So it tends to be a mixture of grassroots type activities.
Are there examples you've seen in your research where this was really successful?
Yeah, there's a lot of very successful groups. I think two that people know very well would be AIDS and breast cancer. Now, they obviously start with an advantage in the sense that there were a lot of people with both of those diseases, and it's a nationwide disease, and they're both pretty devastating diseases. So they had a lot to build on. But even in those cases, they had to overcome some early ignorance. So people didn't understand the disease as well as they could. They had to overcome some stigma. So certainly people with AIDS and even breast cancer, although it's hard to believe from our modern perspective, felt shy, ashamed of their disease, unwilling to come out with it publicly. That's obviously changed. So they had to confront that. But once they were able to surmount those barriers, they have been really successful at putting the word out there. So you think of ribbons. So the breast cancer people have the pink ribbon. The AIDS people have the red ribbon. They've gotten all over the media. They've been very successful at recruiting celebrities to help publicize these particular diseases because people are very interested in this country in celebrity. And so that's another way often that a disease can go from pretty much invisible to much more visible really overnight.
You have a recent book about that, right? About how celebrities can help raise the profile of the disease.
Yes. I wrote a book basically about celebrity patients. And that's one of the things they do. They elevate interest in a disease partly because of their medical condition, right? So if these people either have the disease or they know a friend or family member and they want to talk about it publicly, they obviously have a very good forum to do so. I think that the public and the media is eager to talk to celebrities who are willing to go public with their diagnosis or with information about a particular disease. You might think of someone like Michael J. Fox as a great example. I mean, how can you not admire him, right? So he's got a very difficult disease, Parkinson's. He's willing to talk openly about his diagnosis, about his treatments, even his prognosis. That puts a lot of energy behind a campaign to publicize the disease. The fact is that celebrities hold a lot of oomph in this country, and sometimes that can be marshaled in an important cause, for example, publicizing a given disease.
I know that there was a really prominent Valley Fever researcher who recently died. I've heard anecdotally that he used to say that he wished someone who was mildly famous would get a very mild case of Valley Fever, you know, just so that they would be able to shine a more, you know, broader light on the disease. And I, you know, it's interesting. I know that there are some baseball players who have gotten it, but I don't think they've been willing to really, you know, talk about it openly.
You know, I think I've heard that so commonly, not just with respect to Valley Fever, but other diseases. People have come up to me, for example, after I've spoken about breast cancer publicly and said, we're like the lung cancer people and we can't find a celebrity to talk about lung cancer. Unfortunately, so many of them die, but it's a very common problem that you want someone who's a spokesperson and someone who people will admire to get out there. But it's hard to do because these are illnesses. They're private things. And just because some people are willing to go public about certain diseases doesn't mean that someone with something like Valley Fever will also feel the need to do that. One would hope that with enough urging and facilitation, that sort of thing could happen. Again, that gets back to what I was saying before about legwork and grassroots organizing, I can tell you from my research that some of the reasons that celebrities did go public with other diseases is that they got badgered enough and persuaded enough that they were willing to do it because
really?
The case was made. Exactly.
I interviewed a man who has AIDS and, you know, has been involved in the AIDS movement since it began in L.A., I think, you know, decades ago. And he was talking about the need for just in general a champion. And, some, you know, and I guess the champion for them became Ryan White because he was someone who at that point the disease was stigmatized as a gay disease. And they were able to, you know, it was unfortunate that a child had to get it for them to be able to find a champion. But that was who was able to put that public face on it. And so going beyond celebrity, is that something that you've seen that there just needs to be some sort of champion that can really put a face on the diseases?
Absolutely. It doesn't have to necessarily be a famous person. To begin with, it has to be someone who grabs the public's attention. So exactly. Ryan White was not a famous person until he got sick. And you can find many other diseases where someone, an ordinary person, got the disease, but their story was so compelling and the people working with them were so good at getting that story out to the public that they do become visible faces of the disease and you get people to pay attention. And mind you, it's very helpful to get not just people with that disease, but you want to expand it to the broader population. That's, I think, where breast cancer, for example, has been so successful. People go march in breast cancer walks, not just who've had breast cancer. It's people who know people have breast cancer, people who just want to do research, funding to get research for the disease. Another challenge for something like Valley Fever, ironically, is the name. I think if people hear fever, they may say, oh, all right, well, so people get a fever, they hear valley, they don't live near a valley. Why should I be concerned about this? And the reality is that's where the salesmanship needs to come in. And certainly the numbers of people who are getting sick with this disease in California are very significant and there are deaths from it. So the challenge then is to say, gee, it's called Valley Fever. It may not sound so severe to you, but it can really not only be severe but misdiagnosed. And I think that is potentially a compelling argument for people to say, you know what, this is something you could get and you really should know about it just in case your doctor doesn't figure it out.
It's almost like you need a rebranding because the name sounds so benign.
Well, there's some interesting stories. It's hard to rebrand, but people certainly take these things into account. So, for example, people with chronic fatigue syndrome have been upset over the years that their disease is called a syndrome. Right. So they said, well, gee, if you call something a syndrome, people aren't going to take it seriously enough. We feel like we have a disease and we need to get more concern about this. That's one example. I mean, that hasn't been resolved in any way. So many groups have been through this issue of trying to find names that grab the public's attention that are more legitimate. You know, when we learned about it in medical school, it was always called coccidiomycosis. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the way, somebody changed the name, I guess, or it was called both. But it was interesting to me that when I learned it was coccidiomycosis.
Yeah.
No one ever said Valley Fever. This was 30 years ago, obviously.
You still hear medical people calling it that,
yes,
or calling it coxie.
Right. Coxie, yeah. I mean, you know, coccidiomycosis, it's obviously doesn't trip off the tongue, but it does sound more ominous than Valley Fever,
right,
I must say. I think it's hard to come out explicitly and say, gee, we want more attention. We're going to change the name of this. That's hard to do, but you should at least acknowledge, perhaps in publicity efforts, why is it called Valley Fever? It doesn't only occur in valleys. The fever can be very severe. There, even though the name may sound not as dire as something like cancer, people do die from it. More people die from this fever than the fever caused by West Nile. Those sorts of comparisons, I think, could be very helpful in educating people to why a disease that has a name that might sound rather benign, nevertheless, can be very serious.
What other lessons can we take from other movements, maybe apply them to this disease to help, you know, raise the profile of it?
Well, another thing that's been very helpful for these diseases is to get people involved who are very outgoing and won't take no for an answer. So I will tell you, if you look back at the history of activism for not just diseases, another topic I've researched is drunk driving. That was something that people ignored for years that then became a very important topic. The people who start these campaigns and movements have to be so committed to it that they really devote an enormous amount of energy to it, because otherwise it gets subsumed by other worthy causes. So, I mean, I think we would love to live in a world where the diseases that cause the most harm would get the most funding and the diseases that weren't so important would get less funding. But the fact of the matter is, the reality is the groups that scream loudest and have the best stories often get the most resources. And you get someone probably who's had the disease or knows someone with the disease and maybe has some connections who really will not only try to engineer a public relations campaign, but stick with it and be very determined